Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
Hello and welcome to the Game Day podcast from TalkSport with me, Sam Matterface, the former West Ham and England striker Dean Ashton, and TalkSport's Alex Crook, as the Premier League weekend produces a mega game between the masters.
Andy Robertson's corner and Konate heads it in. 15 yards outside the box, Sterling, De Bruyne! Kevin De Bruyne scores his 10th league goal of the season.
City and Liverpool clash as both look to remain on course for historic wins, while Chelsea come under mounting pressure and Arsenal are feeling Tottenham's Hotspurs. Everton's 68-year stay in the top flight is under serious threat and Watford could drag Leeds right back in. So much to get through on the podcast that is just about as valuable as a Maradona jersey from the 1986 World Cup. It is the Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
This is Game Day.
Hello and welcome to the show. Did you see that in the week? Steve Hodge, who played in England's midfield in 1986, has got Maradona's jersey from the World Cup quarterfinal that England lost by 2-1 when Maradona scored those two goals, one sublime, the other ridiculous, using his hand, valued at £4 million. Dean Ashton, did it send you scurrying up into the loft to find out what you'd got left up there from your playing days?
No, because I'd got rid of mine years ago, and we, you know, I wish maybe I'd kept a couple, but I certainly haven't had anything like a Maradona World Cup shirt. That's for sure.
Crook, what a spoozing weekend we've got. Grand Prix, the Masters, and the Manchester City-Liverpool game all on Sunday. It's going to be like addictive, isn't it?
Yeah, my head is already exploding, to be honest. And actually, we're recording this podcast Thursday morning. That's the start of the Grand National Meet. Looking forward to that. Masters coverage starts 2:00 Thursday afternoon. And then there'll be some football in between as well, I'm sure.
The Premier League is the biggest league in the world, though, and the games do not get much bigger than this. But does the winner take it all?
To Sterling, midpoint of the Burnley half, give and go with De Bruyne, easily away from Taylor, cuts it back to Gundogan, super Manchester City goal, quick as a flash, Walker, Sterling, Gundogan, 2-0.
Benfica have all 11 back in the penalty area to defend, Andy Robertson's corner and Konate heads it in. Well, they had all 11 back, but they still gave Konate the freedom of the box to attack the delivery, left footed, out swinging corner, and Konate just waltzed onto it and scores his first goal for Liverpool.
15 yards outside the box, Sterling, De Bruyne! Kevin De Bruyne scores his 10th league goal of the season on the occasion of his 200th Premier League appearance for Manchester City. Pressure, what pressure!
Mate, Keita, oh, he's played it through. Diaz, he's going to be round the goalkeeper and scores! Liverpool are going to win this by 3-1.
We're in this position. We are still in all competitions. We're playing good. We have all the chance still to win all those competitions as well. So just go for it and give everything as a fan as well. Support us like you always do. And just enjoy the ride, like I said before.
What a mouth-watering game this is in the middle of a season defining 2 weeks for both these two sides. Salah, Mane, Jota, Firmino, Diaz, Alexander-Arnold against De Bruyne, Grealish, Sterling, Foden, Cancelo. Often the big games that are hyped like this fall flat, but surely, Dean, this one won't.
No, I just think there's such a great clash of styles. I mean, Liverpool's intensity alongside City's intensity, but also their possession is just, honestly, I can't wait for this game. I think it will be title defining. I think it's that important because I can't see where they're going to drop points elsewhere. The only thing I would say is that, you know, City haven't lost to Liverpool in the Premier League since 2015. They've got a good record at home generally against Liverpool. So I think it's all for Liverpool to do. And Salah's form is slightly worrying, you have to say. He scored one in his last nine in all competitions, club and country, and that was a penalty. And he scored 10 games ago twice. They were both penalties. So he's not scored from open play in his last 10 games.
They're really struggling with that, aren't they? I mean, you know, because that Diaz fella has really struggled to fit in, and that Jota fella doesn't score too many goals.
I know, but I'm talking about the big players in the biggest of games. And we saw his goal earlier on in the season. That was incredible. That was when he was, at his peak. And it just feels as if, I'm just saying, it's one of the key components to the game. You would expect Salah to be a big player in the game, and he's out of form.
Yeah. Do you think we'll get a resolution to the title race in this game, Crook? I was with the Liverpool fan last night who said, we have to win or they win the title. I actually think that it will end up being a draw and the status quo will be maintained.
I agree. Somebody asked me last night who's going to win the big game on Sunday, and I said draw, and was accused of sitting on the fence. But I think it's so tight to call two teams, not much between them in terms of quality, more than capable actually counselling each other out. I think this will be quite cagey because of what's at stake. I think if you look at the way that Atletico Madrid tried to stifle Manchester City in midweek, maybe Liverpool might learn some lessons from that. I think Dean's right to highlight Mo Salah because he is a match winner on his day. Absolutely no question about that. And the fact he's going to this game not in tip-top condition, I think that will make the Manchester City defence rest a little bit easier. I still think there's a twist to come in this title race. I don't necessarily think it comes on Sunday. I think there'll be a game where maybe you don't expect one of the teams to slip up, and they will, maybe a 0-0 draw away at Palace like we saw from Manchester City. I don't think both these teams will be absolutely foot perfect between now and the end of the season. But if you're asking me for a likely outcome this weekend, a draw, I think if Manchester City win the game, I think then it would be difficult to see Liverpool winning the title.
Now, Liverpool's still going to play Manchester United and Everton in the next couple of weeks. It's a massive April for them. It's interesting to think about how Liverpool will approach the game. They've won just two of their last 10 trips to the Etihad. As Dean has already pointed out, their record there is not very good. And despite their form, 10 games in a row, it's difficult for them to go there and play their natural game, Dean, isn't it? Because, you know, they won't be able to dominate the ball as much as they usually do, defend the halfway line, but they do have the ability to trouble City in behind if City do that.
Yeah, and I think that's the way Liverpool will go. I don't necessarily think they will press as high as they normally do. You're right, that high line, they've been fantastic at using that high line. I think I've highlighted it a few times, and I did at the weekend against Watford, in terms of the space that they do vacate Liverpool. I don't think they'll necessarily do that. I think they'll feel their best opportunity will be maybe to sit a little bit deeper. Be really interested to see what midfield plays alongside Fabinho in terms of the two players that are going to sit just in front of him for Liverpool, as to whether they maybe go slightly more defensive with a Henderson and a Milner or something slightly different, and then just use that pace that they've got to create in behind. But I think they're both going to have periods in the game where they dominate these two sides. It's going to come down to fine margins in this game. I think a draw is a great shout because I can't see it being a free-flowing, lots of goals. I think it is going to be the odd goal.
I've been to a lot of Liverpool matches recently, and they have been seeing out results, especially in the Premier League. But I think that's largely down to the fact that the level of opponents that they've been playing. I think they'll be a lot sharper than they were against Watford, for example, because their blood will be up for this game. And as a result of that, you're probably likely to get a better spectacle.
Sometimes stalemates, and particularly if you're talking about a low-scoring draw, it can be seen, as you mentioned, at the top of these big head-to-head clashes not delivering. I don't think that will be the case. I think whatever the outcome, it's going to be a fascinating watch. I think a brilliant tactical battle between Jurgen Klopp and Pep Guardiola. But Liverpool will have to be sharper than they were against Watford. I think they probably had the easier of the Champions League ties in midweek. They had to travel away from home. But I think breaking down Atleti and that anti-football, to quote our own Adrian Durham, probably took more of a toll on Manchester City than it will have done.
They are. They're disgusting, aren't they? I mean, they just kicked the hell out of Jack Grealish for about 20 minutes towards the end of the game. At one stage, someone just kicked the ball in his face. It's like, well, it's not really the right way. And then we were in a, it's Crookie and I were in a WhatsApp group, and we're talking about the new Manchester United manager. We'll get onto that another time. And someone says, Diego Simeone. I was like, well, why on earth would Manchester United, a club steeped in a culture of like producing great, wonderful football, go down that road? I mean, the key is to encourages his team to waste time, kick people, and just try and edge their way through matches. I mean, he's just no. No one wants to watch that.
No. And he gets paid an awful lot of money to come up with actually quite archaic tactics as well. It did make me laugh, Adrian's rant. I think he called them Sunday League players. Outhouses was the polite term that he used. But I do think physically and mentally that would have been a tougher game for Man City than the Benfica game for Liverpool. Again, you're looking at small marginal gains. Maybe Liverpool could be 5% sharper as a result of that. It's going to be a brilliant game. Whatever happens. And I guess you've listed the players that can score the goals for Liverpool without Mo Salah. Maybe that extra firepower could come into it as well, because I said at the start of the season, Manchester City couldn't win the league without a number nine. they've gone some way to prove me wrong, but maybe in games like this, that could come back to haunt them.
That's unlike you to suggest that maybe that you might have slipped up, because you've been doing the opposite for most of the year on the podcast. Well, what are the differences and weaknesses in these two teams now? Absolutely nothing, really. I mean, it's both, really, the squads are so ridiculously deep. If you were making a mythical combination 11, which I usually hate and I think is pointless, actually you'd agonise over every single position. They are so well matched, aren't they, Dean?
Yeah, they are. And I think when you just run deeper into the stats, the only big difference is possession. That's it, really. In terms of the way they, how hard they work off the ball, they're very, very similar. You maybe say Liverpool score a few more goals, but it's that possession. It's what do Liverpool do? Do we see one of those performances that I think, when Liverpool play in a certain manner with a certain intensity, I don't think there's a team on the planet that can handle them. If they play in that intense way where they press high, and it's as a team that I've seen in the past, especially certain European nights I've seen, I don't think any team can cope with them. But if they allow City, which they're so good at, to just dominate the ball, I think City will edge it. So for me, it is all about how Liverpool go about trying to get a result away from home.
Saturday isn't Saturday unless it's game day.
Gourney! Oh my! They've come from behind! Everton plays a shell shot.
The footballers, we expect pressure, whatever form it comes in, and you have to deal with it.
Fred, an unlikely hero for Manchester United, smashes the ball into the roof of the net.
Right now, we are not the favourites for sure for number four.
Arsenal fail to climb above Spurs into the top four.
Apologise to our supporters for the performance that we had. Accept all the criticism.
Morpé, right-footed, has blazed it over the top. It is one of the worst Premier League penalties you are ever likely to see, and it's still Brighton 0, Norwich 0.
Aston Villa turn up the volume inside Villa Park. Aston Villa are back in the game.
It's towards the far post. Kane is there, and he's headed it in, and now this time he's certainly won it.
This moment, only on the table, we are a four, but the most important thing is to see your team that is in the race.
Saturdays were made for game day, and all the big games are here on TalkSport.
Let's get to game day, Saturday, 12:30, from one end of the scale to the other. Live on TalkSport on Saturday lunchtime, it's collapsing, capitulated Everton against moaning Monday Manchester United. First of all, let's reflect on the game on Wednesday night where Everton's attack created chance after chance, but the defence is just so nervy. They conceded three goals to a Burnley side that had previously scored zero goals in their last four games. I mean, you know, Dean and I talking before the game, suggesting that Sean Dyche's words of wisdom at halftime, lads, don't worry about it, they don't know how to win a game, this lot, was the motivation tactic that turned the whole thing on its tide. But actually, I thought it was Ben Godfrey collapsing under the weight of his own shoulders, probably because he's been carrying Michael Keane on them all year.
But just looking at those comments, though, from Sean Dyche, he was basically saying to his players, these lot are bottlers, you know, and they will bottle it. We prove we can see our victories. They haven't done that. It was actually the first time all season, I think, that Burnley have come from behind at half-time to win a game, and that probably says more about Everton than it does about the Clarets. As you reminded me last night, Sam, I've been saying for a while, I think there will be three worse teams than Everton.
Yeah.
Results like that suggest that maybe.
Well, you were getting cocky again, weren't you? Sort of having a go at Everton saying that you'd called it back in January when actually you've been saying every week since then that there'll be three worse teams than them. And then last night you were piling in on them again.
What I did say in January, and I took a lot of stick from Everton fans, was that their business in the transfer window wasn't really fit for purpose. Mikulenko, a player who doesn't know the Premier League. Patterson, a player who actually hadn't played that many games at senior level for Rangers. Dele Alli, who for me is the complete opposite type of character that you need in a relegation scrap. And Donny van de Beek, who actually is proving Manchester United managers of the past correct not to put faith in him in the Premier League. So there's massive problems at Everton. I know you think that Frank Lampard isn't to blame, and actually it was suggested to me by somebody else at TalkSport last night that Rafa Benitez did the damage. I don't think you can give a manager who came in January a completely free pass. He's won two Premier League games out of nine.
January the 30th.
He's chucked the players under more buses than I care to imagine. And he isn't getting a tune out of these players. There's been no significant upturn in fortunes. The confidence looks shot. The belief looks like it's through the floor. And you could say this is the perfect time to play Manchester United. But actually, the way that Arsenal lost on Monday night, it's still not too fanciful to say that United are part of the top four conversation. I think United will win this game. And I think Everton are in big, big trouble.
I don't think they've done particularly well, Everton, and far be it from me to suggest that Frank Lampard has gone in there and made a significant impact. I think he has made a level of impact, but I just think the players are so bad. They won 1 of 15 before his arrival. They've won 4 of 12 since his appointment. So there has been an uptick, but you know they're just so poor. Listen, I watched the game on Wednesday, and they actually were the best team in the match. You know, if you look at their expected goals for the match, they should have won it, but their defence is so bad. They've had problems with injuries as well. Remember, Andros Townsend's out for the season. Yerry Mina can't get fit. Michael Keane was suspended, which was probably a bonus. Look, they take on a Manchester United team now who actually, for whatever reason, I don't know why I believe this, but I actually think Everton might get something from this game. United have won just three of their last 11 Premier League away games. I don't even know how they might get something from the game, Dean, but I think they might.
Yeah, I mean, I'm similar. I don't believe that they will get anything from the game. And I think Sean Dyche has really hit on something in what he said post-match. And it surprised me that he said it, because you wouldn't want to give Everton anything to sort of go away and use as fuel. But I just thought it was incredible that he came out and said that, because I've been there. I was there with Norwich back in 2005-06. And we were the same. We could go 2-0 up, but the minute we conceded a goal, we just capitulated. It's a mentality, and the Everton players have not been there, so they maybe don't understand what it's like, and the Burnley players have, not to panic in certain situations. And it was a great example last night of a team that when they do concede, panic sets in, and they just haven't got the confidence or the organisation to cope. And I think it's going to be very similar. I think it might be tight, but I think if Manchester United get any sort of a foothold in the game, if they score a goal, I think they'll probably win the game comfortably, because the atmosphere is not going to be great if Manchester United can score first, which isn't a given considering their form. But I think this is a game Manchester United can win comfortably, actually.
Obviously, you didn't hear the podcast on Sunday night, Crook, but we did come up with a Sonic logo for Everton, which is this. You know, like you know, like, you know, Just Eat have the, everybody says Just Eat. You know, this is the Everton Sonic logo. So whenever you hear that, you know you're talking about Everton.
Like him.
Everton have won 6 of their last 13 matches on home turf. And home advantage might make a difference in this game.
Yeah, I think that's their best bet. And I think I'm right in saying they've got more home games left than they have away. But you dissect the fixtures.
They got Chelsea at home. That's 3 points.
Well, Manchester United aren't the force of old. So if Everton had anything about them, then they would see this as a big opportunity, I think, to pick up 3 points and just start to allay those relegation fears. But for all the reasons that we've already discussed, they haven't. And then you look at the rest of their run-in. I mean, you're obviously feeling a bit sorry for yourselves after Chelsea's defeat against Real Madrid.
Bad week for me. Poor Frank getting battered and Chelsea being rubbish.
But you still wouldn't put any money on Everton to beat Chelsea. They've got a Merseyside derby. They've got Leicester, who seem to have found a bit of form. They go to Watford, which you have to say is probably their best chance of picking up a win. Brentford at home maybe falls into that category as well. Palace at home is their final match at Goodison Park. And then they go to Arsenal, who might just need a win to get into the top four on the last day of the season. So if Everton are to stay up, it will come down to the point that I made about there being 3 worst teams, because at the moment, I don't think they're capable of saving themselves.
A quick mention of the Friday night game. Newcastle with 31 points. They've won just 4 of their 14 home league fixtures. They're still without Trippier and Wilson. But a win, I think, Dean, against Wolverhampton Wanderers would keep them safe now, wouldn't it?
I think so. I think just the 3 defeats on the bounce have maybe hurt. But you've got Tottenham and Chelsea in there. So I think you've got to take that into account, even at the start of the season, even when they've got the best team out there, tough game. So I wouldn't be too worried if I was a Newcastle fan. I think they've done enough, and I think they will be able to. They're in the sort of realms, and a few teams are that are down there, that you're kind of one win away from being too far, like Crookie said, of the teams in the bottom 3 getting themselves out of it. Do you know what I mean? You giving them a hand. I don't see that for Newcastle, but I see Wolves winning this. I've been really impressed with Wolves. And interesting, they've scored 9 of their 33 goals in their last 4 games. Neto back, Trincao all of a sudden looks like the player that I thought was coming from Barcelona. And Johnny gives them an extra dimension on the right-hand side. So I see Wolves being too strong for Newcastle, but I don't think it's an issue for Newcastle. I think they've done enough already.
A Wolves win takes them above Manchester United before the Saturday morning fixture. Bruno Lage has done a brilliant job with limited resources. As you say, he's got players coming back as well, which has really helped. Wherever they finish, they've had a great season. Manchester United targeting Neves, or maybe we should say the new Manchester United boss targeting Neves, Erik ten Hag. Is he going to take over a team that are playing Conference League football next season?
Possibly. But as I say, call me foolhardy, but I think with Arsenal losing on Monday night, I did dare to look at the top of the league table, which I haven't done for some time. And it tells me Manchester United are only 3 points behind those Champions League places. So if they can find a bit of form and start winning some games, that they've still got a chance of being part of that conversation. It's a big if, because the performances have been dreadful, really, since Ralf Rangnick came in. No surprise, the Ruben Neves link. I know he's someone that's been on Manchester United's radar for some time. They made tentative inquiries in January, and it was clear that if he was to leave Molineux, it would be this summer and not in that transfer window. I expect a bit of interest and a bit of competition from Barcelona as well. But I'm pleased they've settled on Ten Hag. Not because
you're calling
necessarily...
You're calling it. So the investigation is over. Is that right?
I think the investigation is over. And I think in reality it's been over for a couple of weeks now, when United were putting out those vibes that actually it's not a closed shop. There's still numerous contenders. I think from the moment they interviewed Ten Hag, and I think they've spoken to Edwin van der Sar as well about him, I think they settled that this would be the man to take them forward. Will he be a success? I said on Twitter last night, good luck to him, because I think he'll need it. You know, he's going to inherit all the problems at Manchester United that previous managers have been unable to solve. For me, I'd feel a lot better about it if Van der Sar was actually coming with him, because I think there's still an issue when it comes to the board. Can we stop playing the Pink Panther music now, please?
Why is it putting you off?
So I think unless he can get a hold of that behind-the-scenes structure, and be able to run the club in his own image, as he has done at Ajax,
Well, he doesn't run the club, does he? I mean, that's the point. I mean, he's just a head coach. That's what he does. He's a head coach. He's not a manager. No, a manager isn't going to take charge of Manchester United. It doesn't work like that anymore. It can't work like that anymore. There's far too much to do now.
Well, therefore, I think this will be another appointment that doesn't work out, and not necessarily because Ten Hag isn't a good manager, but because behind the scenes, Manchester United aren't fit for purpose in terms of challenging for the top four and challenging for titles. I think he's got an awful lot of work to do in terms of players going out, players coming in. I think there will be players who will benefit. I mean, he likes to play with out and out wide men at Ajax, so that should be good news for Jadon Sancho and maybe Marcus Rashford as well. But the first job is to clear that toxic dressing room.
It's interesting to see who he brings in terms of his staff as well, because Renny Meulensteen has been linked with a return to the club. Steve McLaren has been linked with a return as an assistant, because those two work together in opposite roles at FC 20. McLaren very much sort of bigging him up, saying that he's the best in-game tactical manager since Fergie that he's ever seen. And he's sort of worked with him, so he knows him very well. His attention to detail, brilliant. But he is just a coach, and he does like to play front foot football, and he can do that in the Eredivisie, because guess what? The rest of the teams are absolutely useless, yeah. And he's got the best resources in that division. At Manchester United, he isn't going to have that. He's definitely not going to have the best squad in the league. So he's going to have to adapt and think about how he's going to play, because we've already seen in the Champions League, you know, I think Benfica had four shots on goal against the Ajax and scored three of them in the previous round of the competition. So you have to be a little bit careful. We'll see what happens with that. Right, okay, let's move on.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
After a brilliant performance at home to Newcastle, Tottenham go to lacklustre, stuttering Aston Villa. Kane and Son Kulusevski licking their lips at the Villa defence, who have come off the bridle since they realised they're in limbo, and actually, they haven't got too much to play for, Dean.
No, and that inconsistency's evident for Villa. You know, win three and then lose three. You know, I think it's going to be a big summer. I think that's probably what Steven Gerrard is looking at. And I think that will favour Tottenham because of that, because I think he's looking at players, Steven Gerrard, and thinking, do I actually want you next season? How's my team going to look next season? And I think Tottenham, with the form that they're in, the goals that they're scoring, 21 goals in the last six Premier League games. I mean, I find it hard. I'm doing this game for TalkSport, and I'm finding it hard to make a case for Aston Villa. To be honest, I don't blame Steven Gerrard for probably tinkering a few bits here and there and finding the right players. I think that is his job now, to find out who he needs, who he wants for next season, and then they can build again.
West Ham, Arsenal and Wolves have all beaten Villa recently. They've won just five Premier League matches at home all season, actually. That's been a bit of an issue for them. But Antonio Conte has put Tottenham Hotspur in pole position now, hasn't he, for a top four spot. They have come into form at just the right time, Crookie.
Yeah, and they've got a favourable run in. Even discussing them and Arsenal before Tottenham put Newcastle to the sword at the weekend, it looked like Tottenham on paper had the opportunity to put more points on the board than their North London rivals. I'm sure the television companies and probably us at TalkSport are hoping that it does come down to a straight shootout in that North London derby, hastily penciled in for the final week of the season.
Hastily is not the right word, is it? Because it actually took them a long time to pencil it in. I mean, crikey. I mean, they were waiting right to the very end, the last window they could possibly get for that.
But there will be people, and I'm not necessarily one of them, who would say it would be poetic justice if Arsenal were to miss out on the top four in that fixture, because, of course, there was a big suspicion when they called off the game earlier in the season that maybe they were playing the system at the time when it was easier to get games called off due to COVID.
No.
We can't confirm or deny that. But I expect Spurs to win at the weekend. I expect them to win relatively comfortably. You text me in the boot room last Sunday and said, stop having a pop at Steven Gerrard. But it's not been brilliant, has it, for Aston Villa since he came in? Let's be honest, they have been inconsistent. There have been some good performances, but there have been some pretty poor ones as well. And it does raise the question, Felipe Coutinho, is he too ambitious to stay at Aston Villa beyond the end of the season? Will there be clubs in the Champions League, in the upper echelons of the Premier League, that will try and prize him away? I think it's going to be a fascinating situation.
Stop having a go at Steven Gerrard and Frank Lampard. That's all you do. Just a jealous Man United fan from the 2000s. Yeah, look, I think they've been brilliant, Tottenham. When Antonio Conte was appointed, I thought, look, they've got every chance because they can get better. And Arsenal at the time, I thought, had probably topped out. I think Arsenal have hurt themselves, and we'll talk about Arsenal in just a few moments. But I just wanted to say, get well soon to the great Ozzy Ardiles, who had major heart surgery this week. Our best wishes to him. He was, when I was growing up as a kid, I mean, he was part of the Tottenham team that sort of everybody loved watching because they were so expressive and so brilliant on the ball, so dazzling to watch. I mean, the whole to dare is to do motto comes from that sort of era, doesn't it? When, you know, Ozzy and Glenn and Chrissy Waddle were all playing, and they were fantastic to watch. So best wishes to him. Well, what has happened at Chelsea? They take on Southampton this weekend, 3 o'clock on Saturday. Their defensive performance against Real Madrid was truly shocking. I'm still waiting for Trevor Sinclair to return my text, which we've had a difference of opinion on Andreas Christensen for a while, but let's just say in that game, Bambi on ice. But he wasn't the only one. A midfield configuration again, which has been an issue all year. I think I was saying it to you when they were top of the league. Oh, that's Freudian slip. They were top of the league. He's wrong. It's not right. And Lukaku comes off the bench and he's just not reliable enough. He missed two golden chances, Dean. I mean, you would have snaffled those up in a heartbeat, wouldn't you?
Well, I think it was just exposed when you saw how cool and calm and creative Benzema was at the other end with his headers, and the way Lukaku, especially the one where he really kind of snatched his neck at it and put it wide when it seemed very easy just to put it in the corner. And it is an issue. It has been an issue since he got that injury after a bit of good form at the start of the season. It's been an issue of how to get the best out of him. Certainly, and it feels like he doesn't maybe suit the way that Chelsea play. But I think this is a great game. What a great game to have against a Saints side that literally have fallen off the end of a cliff. You know, Hasenhüttl was being touted by, I think Glenn Hoddle said, Manchester United.
Crook.
And all of all of a sudden they've nosedived. So I see Chelsea bouncing back, actually. I think Tuchel will have really torn into them and will do over the next few days. And I see Chelsea winning this comfortably, actually.
The issue is, if they don't, Chelsea's season could collapse in double quick time, couldn't it? They lose this, they lose the Champions League game next week. I mean, you're going to Madrid, so that's definitely put the mockers on them. They'll never get back from 3-1 down in the Bernabeu anyway. Then the FA Cup becomes their focus next Sunday, which is live on TalkSport. You know, it is a pivotal week for Chelsea, for Liverpool, Manchester City as well, but for Chelsea in particular, because at the end of next Sunday, they could have absolutely nothing to play for.
Yeah, and I made one of my bold claims, actually, when the draw...
Here we go.
Crookie's bold claim.
I said that I think Patrick Vieira will be leading a team out in the FA Cup final. I think it's written in the stars. having kicked his last ball for Arsenal, scoring the winner in a penalty shootout in the cup final against Manchester United. I think he's proved himself this season to be a very capable manager. He's proved me wrong because I was worried for Palace, but they've been terrific. I guess we'll preview that game in more detail next week. I sort of agree with Dean about this weekend. Southampton are on the beach. I mean, their season is over. It ended with that FA Cup defeat against Manchester City, and they're such a streaky team. They can go on long winning unbeaten runs, but when they're not picking up victories, it's hard to see where the next one is coming from. But I think there's pressure on Chelsea, and he will want a reaction, Thomas Tuchel, to try and build up a bit of confidence going into midweek, because obviously they were hammered by Brentford last time out. And I know you touched on the podcast at the weekend that maybe now we're seeing some off-field issues actually seep into the dressing room. You mentioned the defence. I mean, you've got Christensen, Rudiger and Afpel Equator, three players who could be playing their football elsewhere come next season. I know Afpel Equator is likely to stay, but the other two still very much up in the air.
If Christensen's playing his football elsewhere, no one's going to complain about that.
But surely that's going to have an impact as well, Dean, when you've got three of your back five effectively not knowing if they're going to be at the club beyond the end of the season. And I want to talk about Mason Mount as well, Sam, because you're the biggest Mason Mount fan in the world. Has he had the type of season that guarantees him? If the World Cup was happening this summer, would his form at club level be enough to get him in the England starting 11? I'm not sure.
Probably not, actually. I don't think he's played particularly well, but I think, as I've said to you, I think a number of times that midfield configuration is wrong. Then playing him in a position where I'm not sure that he's able to do his best work. You look at last night, the start of the game. I mean, the first half, I mean, they changed it at half-time, actually. They brought Kovacic on at the break for N'Golo Kante. But Kante, Jorginho and Mount just doesn't work. Jorginho and Kante can't play in the same team. Or it's not against the top teams, not against the best teams. Because they leave too many spaces, because they both really want to do the same job, which is operate at the base of a midfield. And Conte trying to play further up means that when they do get into the final third, they lack a little bit of quality. Mount's trying to cover for that and add the little bit of creativity behind the front three. You know, Pulisic's playing as a sort of a second striker last night in the first 45 minutes, and he's not really doing that. It's not the right system. It doesn't fit. I mean, I think he's better, Mount, as one off the front, personally. But actually, he's not a winger. So that means that if you're playing with a system where you want wide players, Ziyech and Pulisic, then it's unlikely that he's going to get into those two. So he plays a little bit deeper, maybe as a third midfielder in a three. And that isn't really his position either, unless you've got two dynamic number eights and one holding. But Chelsea seem to play two holders and one in front. And that doesn't work.
No, to be fair, I actually think Mount's been one of their best players. I think he is a victim of some of the players in front of him.
No,
you can tell he's got a good link with Havertz, who's got that intelligence and wonderful link play. When Werner and Lukaku are up there, I think Mount looks a little bit lost as to how's he gonna link with these two players, and it's all a little bit too frantic. But I think he is the first name on the team sheet, certainly for Tuchel.
Yeah, I agree with you, Dean. Takeover latest: Todd Boehly actually bowled up to Stamford Bridge yesterday, Wednesday night. He just walked in the ground, and there was pictures of him on his own just strolling up. We should get a preferred bidder by the beginning of next week, shouldn't we, Crook? Is that what you understand?
Yeah, I'm still slightly surprised he's dragging on as long as it is. You know, I mean, I think we expected a much quicker sale, and I don't think it's doing Chelsea any favours on the pitch, this continuing uncertainty. But I think you're right. I think by the middle of next week, we should know a little bit more. I think at the moment that Boehly consortium are the favourites, if you like. So I think for Chelsea, the sooner a line is drawn under that and they know the future direction of the club, the better for all concerned, because it must be having an impact in the dressing room now. It simply has to be.
Arsenal taken apart by Palace on Monday night to shift favouritism to Tottenham in the race for fourth place. We now have a date for the North London Derby, the 12th of May, as we've already mentioned, two games before the end. It's been a terrible week, typical Arsenal showing in that game against Palace after a sturdy start to 2022 in the Premier League. But, well, I suppose the good news, Dean, is at least we know they won't concede this weekend when they take on Brighton live on TalkSport 2.
I know. Again, a bit like Southampton, when everyone was saying Graham Potter should be at this club, you know, where's he going to be next? The team has fallen off another cliff down at the south coast, and you know, they're bottom three for goals per match, and that's been evident in recent games. You know, they've scored once in seven Premier League games, and again for Arsenal, a bit like Chelsea, I think this game couldn't have come at a better time for them. Just maybe when obviously the loss of Tierney and maybe Partey, and but I expect this from Arsenal. I know people are jumping on top of them because of the performance against Palace, but I fully expect these performances from Arsenal. They're a very, very young team. They're going to have the odd inconsistencies. They're going to have the odd game where everyone goes, well, what happened there? That is what happens with young players. I certainly believe they're going very much in the right direction. I still think they've got a great chance of top four. I don't think Tottenham are going to win every single game from now till the end of the season. So they've just got to try and hopefully have had some composure. I think he tried to do that in his interview afterwards, Arteta. Yes, they could do with Lacazette actually, you know, finding the net, because again, that's maybe putting pressure on why they let Aubameyang go, and they let Chambers go as well. It just, when there's a defeat like this, I think all those things come out and are thrown at Arteta. But I expect this. I expect this from a young Arsenal team.
Yeah, you do. You love Arteta, don't you? You're in the Arteta camp. Crook and I have been a little bit less glowing in our praise of him. And I wonder whether or not he's actually paying for the price for selecting a small squad for the second half of the season. Six players left in January, and now Tierney's out for the season, as you mentioned. Thomas Partey's out long-term. Tomiyasu isn't fit yet. And if they don't get top four, having been in such a commanding position, those mistakes, those decisions will come into sharp focus.
Yeah, and then it comes down to the ability to recruit top-level players in the summer in order to kick you on. I think Lacazette will go. I think he's been a decent captain since taking the armband from Aubameyang, but he doesn't offer enough in terms of scoring goals, and that is his main focus. But there's going to be a big difference in the calibre of player that Arsenal can attract if they're playing Europa League football next season compared to if they're in the Champions League. They've been linked with Darwin Núñez, for example, who did well for Benfica against Liverpool in midweek. He won't join Arsenal if they're in the Europa League. So this is a pivotal few weeks. I sort of agree with Dean. I think they are moving in the right direction, but it will be a significant setback if they don't finish in the top four, having got themselves in a position of authority. But the pressure was always going to be intensified because early in the season, nobody was talking about Arsenal for top four. So they could almost go about their business quietly under the radar. Now, everybody's telling those young players they're favourites for Champions League football. And that does bring a different pressure. And you have to say they're wilted under that pressure against Crystal Palace. It was a very different type of Arsenal performance from their last away game that I commentated for TalkSport against Aston Villa, when I'm impressed with their character. I didn't see much character from Arsenal on Monday night. And definitely, it's been a mistake to shrink the squad as much as they have. And they're not learning lessons. Thomas Partey, I think I'm right in saying, was sent off against Liverpool after returning from the last round of international matches because he didn't look like he was mentally and physically prepared. And he's got injured now, again, having been away with Ghana. I think Mikel Arteta will be very disappointed in Scotland that Tierney started both of their friendly matches, because we know that Tierney does have a history of picking up injuries. But the players they've got in backup just aren't really fit for purpose. Tavares had a wretched second half of the season, going back to when he was hauled off after half an hour against Nottingham Forest. We said at the time that that would dent his confidence. I think it certainly has so. And when they're looking for goals, the only real option to come on and boost the forward line is Eddie Nketiah, who's a mid-table Premier League player at best.
Watford have lost eight in a row at home, but if they were to beat Leeds on Saturday, Leeds have got two games in hand on Everton and Burnley. That would pull Jesse Marsh's team right back in it, wouldn't it, Dean?
Yes, I suppose you would have to say it does. I look at what Roy's trying to do at Watford. He's desperately trying to turn them into what Palace were, which is, you know, a really low block of a defence and midfield, and then a little bit of pace and magic on the counter-attack. I think I think Leeds are going to win this game because I think Leeds are going to swarm all over them. I don't think that that Watford and that defence is good enough, actually. And I've seen enough from Leeds. I know they haven't quite picked up the results they probably would have liked, but I've seen enough in them to believe that, again, that they're another one of those sides where another win, you know, and that just gives you enough. Again, I've been there in the bottom three. If Watford see, you know, and get beat by Leeds, that's it. You know, Watford and Leeds, you can forget about those two in terms of the competitiveness, and that's all it takes. And I just see a little bit more fight from Leeds than I maybe do from the likes of an Everton, certainly.
Leeds without a clean sheet in 17 games, and they've conceded 29 goals in their last 9 away games. Watford gave Liverpool a few scares last week, had 3 great chances to score, didn't take them. Will they take them at home to Leeds, Crook? Or if you're of the same opinion as Dean, that actually Leeds just look more up for the fight than Watford do?
Yeah, I think they do. I would agree with that. I think there are certain Watford players who look resigned to their fate. But having said that, as you mentioned, they did have big chances against Liverpool. I think when Roy Hodgson was appointed, we knew that he would improve them defensively. I think he's done that to a point, although you still can't see them keeping too many clean sheets. But the forward players aren't really firing, are they, as they were earlier in the season? Emmanuel Dennis seems to have dried up in terms of goals. Ismaïla Sarr has been in and out of fitness and hasn't been able to hit top gear. Missing Persons out for Josh King, who only seems to turn up against clubs either that he's played for and feels he's been scorned, or that he hasn't played for in the case of Manchester United and feels he's been scorned because they didn't buy him back. So I do question Watford's motivation, and I think Leeds can win this game. And I think if they do win this game, then you can stop talking about them as relegation candidates as well.
Big chance for Burnley to put back-to-back wins together and put Everton in a real sticky position. They could end up, if Everton don't win their game on Saturday lunchtime and Burnley win their match away at Norwich on Sunday at 2 o'clock, then Everton will be in the bottom three. Norwich, no wins in 7. Look easy pickings, don't they?
Yes, they do. But they have done all season. You know, they just can't even buy a goal, really, can they? 18 goals in 30 games for Norwich is just pathetic, if I'm honest. It is. It's pathetic in terms of being a threat. And I think that Dean Smith at times has improved them defensively, dare I say, and they've been more competitive without really looking like they're going to win games, and they've just got a soft underbelly. And I think Burnley, with that win, they'll really feel. And I think what's so crucial is that early game for Everton. So the teams like Watford, like Burnley, they're all looking at that game. They're praying Manchester United do them a favour. And if they do, that gives you extra motivation as a player to think, right, Burnley, we can go ahead now. We can get out and away from that dotted line. Watford will think, right, we can now draw level with Everton. I think that game is so big for Everton that it's gonna dictate, and probably we'll see how Watford and Burnley go about their games, depending on how Everton get on, because that's how big the mentality is down there at the bottom. You need that extra motivation to be able to get across, and that's why I said I favour Leeds, because I've seen so much fight in Leeds that I maybe haven't seen in other teams, and I don't think fight is something that we're going to be questioning at Burnley, and they'll just have too much. For Norwich, you haven't got a lot of fight.
Yeah, I think the key thing is that there's probably two big games at the weekend. One mega game on Sunday afternoon, 4:30, Liverpool against Manchester City at the Etihad. But I don't think we'll learn as much from that match as we will from Everton against Manchester United. I think the impact of Everton-Manchester United will be more far-reaching than any other game this weekend.
Yeah, and again, because it's set up as the early kickoff, if Everton win the game, something that applies a whole fresh batch of pressure on Burnley on Sunday. If they don't win the game, then Burnley will see it as a huge opportunity to haul themselves out at the bottom three. And I mean, you've mentioned a couple of teams that you want to be facing at this moment in time in Southampton and Brighton. I would put Norwich in that category as well. I think on another day, they'd have got hammered at the Amex. If they were playing a side who had anything up front, then it would have been a comfortable Brighton win. That goal return is paltry, as Dean has said. And again, I got a stick at the start of the season for questioning Norwich's recruitment and questioning their desire to stay in the Premier League.
Cracky, I constantly get, you know, pulled aside, you know, Crook, he's a disgrace. What is he saying about Arne Pearl? Honestly, your name is running through the streets of Norwich still. I don't think you're allowed back. Are you sure?
He's never been there anyway.
But have I been proved wrong? I mean, I think they've been a dreadful addition to the Premier League. I think they've contributed nothing from the first game of the season until we sit here in mid-April. I think they've stamped the place out, to be quite honest.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a waste of a season for Norwich, really. I mean, okay, so they'll probably make some money out of it, but really and truly, I mean, in entertainment-wise, I mean, not one game have you gone into and thought, oh, Norwich have got a chance today. I mean, it's almost like every week, if they get anything out of a game, it's a major, major shock, isn't it? I mean, like you said, 18 goals over the season. It's embarrassing.
I've just felt pity for them. That's probably as...
And you're one of their own.
Well, exactly. And I live in the city, and I know how it changes the city, whether they're doing well or not. And that's how it's felt. Everyone's felt a little bit sorry for themselves, and it's felt... I've just felt pity for watching them. And that was a great example at the weekend. I think Brighton had 30 shots and Norwich didn't have one on target. And you know, a couple of the guys I follow on Twitter that go to the games and follow Norwich, and someone just said, please let it stop.
They could have said that in August.
Brentford have had a brilliant season. They've shown how you should come up from the Championship. West Ham have had a good season too. 7 games to go for both of them. West Ham eyeing up another European campaign. And they might be the ones, actually, alongside Wolverhampton Wanderers, that push Manchester United into the Conference League next season. They've done particularly well, I think, and even adjusting to the fact that they've been playing in the Europa League, Dean, because that's obviously taken a lot out of them.
It has. I've only got admiration, I think, for this West Ham team, especially the players that are put out there game in, game out, without much rest, because West Ham didn't put their hand in the pocket in January when I felt they should have done. And they keep ploughing on, they keep getting results, they keep surprising, I think, a lot of people in terms of being able just to keep their hopes alive of top four with what they're doing in Europe as well. Bowen's back, which is a huge bonus. I think it'll all depend on how it goes on Thursday. I think they've shown that it takes a lot out of them, and it will do. I think the emotional side of it as well, being at home on Thursday to Lyon, against Lyon, and emotionally how much that takes out of them, and a more bright, upbeat Brentford. And what a signing, Eriksen. What a signing that is for any team that was down there. It's a genius signing.
All hail Patrick Vieira for a wonderful job that he's done at Crystal Palace. I sat here last week and said I think they would trouble Arsenal, but even I couldn't have envisaged how savagely they would take Arsenal apart. But they might have one eye on that FA Cup semi-final when they go to Leicester, who themselves are distracted because they're going after the inaugural Europa Conference League, Crook.
Yeah, it's a question of which team wants this game less, really, isn't it? But I think Crystal Palace will be motivated. They sit in ninth place in the Premier League as it stands. They're on course for their highest ever Premier League finish. They're not going to bridge the gap to the top eight because they're 12 points behind. But we know that Patrick Vieira is a born winner. And we know that financially, finishing as high as you can on the table will have its rewards when it comes to the summer transfer window. And they're going to need a few million pounds, I think, to keep Conor Gallagher beyond the end of the season. So I'm expecting another good performance from Crystal Palace. And I think Leicester, with one eye maybe on the second leg of their Europa League tie against PSV Eindhoven, might just be there for the taking this weekend.
Okay, gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it. Dean, thank you very much. Crookie, thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to see you too. We spent a lot of time together over the last couple of weeks. Dean, I'm a bit disappointed that we're not seeing each other this weekend. But I'm sure that will happen very soon. Alex, see you on Sunday. That's it from us. We're back Monday morning when you wake up looking back on the big City-Liverpool tussle and safe in the knowledge that both Everton and Manchester United both can't lose. That is the start of game day on TalkSport 12:30. I hope you can join us for that. Reshman is back and Trevor and I will be at Goodison Park for what is a cracking start to a great weekend.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.